This is the Old Mutual two-part deep dive podcast brought to you by Old Mutual.
Good day and welcome to this fascinating conversation around retirement, around savings, around planning for our lives that is brought to you by Old Mutual. For today, we're going to be focusing around financial advice. We're going to be focusing around what does it actually take to get to a point of retirement, you know, in this day and age? What does it take to a point to have enough money to be able to have something on the side? I speak as a millennial, you know, that it's something feels as if there just isn't enough money in the world. But we are just going to be talking to someone who can give us some understanding. That is Thabo Holo, who is a program manager for Old Mutual Financial Education. And he's going to be leading us through a discussion around how people such as myself and yourself can actually go out there and, you know, put your earnings to work, put your earnings towards some savings, and specifically a system called the two-pot system, what that actually means, you know, and he's going to lead us through, you know, some of the tips and tricks around how people can actually implement it in their lives. Thabo, greetings to you today.
Greetings, Mudiwa, and thanks for the opportunity.
So you've heard me, you know, talking about the fact that we're here to talk about retirement. We're here to talk about, you know, how do people actually put some of that, some of those things to the side and together. So maybe what we can start with is the two-pot system. We've heard a little bit of noise around this. There's actually been a push, you know, nationally around this. But maybe you could start us there. What is the two-pot system?
Let's hope you heard the right noise, Mudiwa, as a start. But just to keep it simple, the two-pot system is a retirement system that is purported to begin on the 1st of September 2024. This spells out of the Revenue Laws Amendment Bill, which was signed most recently by the president. But in summary, the two-pot system talks about how the retirement contribution will be split into what we call two pots. So two portions, right? The savings portion and the preservation portions. So for instance, a third will go into the savings portion and two thirds will go into the preservation portion. But in essence is one amount that gets split into two pots, and that's how it's going to be managed, at least from the 1st of September 2024.
So we've often heard a lot to do with retirement. We get sensitized about this a lot from the time that some people get into formal employment. You start hearing about these deductions that are going towards retirement. At least that's the privilege people have in formal employment. For others, you're told, you know, you need to, maybe for entrepreneurs, self-employed, all of that stuff, you're told, go and get some of those annuity type of products, all of that. How is this two-pot system different from what people would consider that traditional retirement system?
No, absolutely. And yes, you're absolutely correct. The two-pot system is almost like a revolutionary way of handling your retirement. And it's remarkably different from the old way. I'll give you an example. In the old way or the old system, if you choose to resign from work, you have access to the entire pot of money that you've saved throughout your period, presuming that, of course, you've saved some money, whether it's through formal employment or even in informal employment. If you had chosen to buy an annuity product, a retirement annuity being an example, and you choose to say, I want to take my money, you have access to that amount. In terms of the new way of doing things, the two-pot way of doing things, the whole idea is to also encourage preservations. Okay. So whilst you have access to some sort of savings that you put into that, at least a portion of the contribution, but you have a sum that is preserved at least up until you retire. So the rules are different in terms of the two-pot system and from the old pension schemes, retirement annuities. And that's the major difference is now you have one amount that can be split into two, whereas in the olden days, it was just one amount and you had to choose a particular scheme or product that you want to put your money into.
Okay. Maybe what we can do is to get a little bit deeper into I guess, those two parts and how the withdrawal element actually works. And especially given the fact that in your traditional system, there tends to be a lot of rules and regulations. In certain cases, you even have tax implications, all of this stuff that comes into how you are actually accessing your funds, you know, at the end. Some people do it as big lump sums, others it's a small amount, you know, all of that. When it comes to withdrawing from, let's say, the savings pot, right, what are some of the conditions that actually lie on that front?
So let's start with the first portion from the 1st of September, where, for instance, the what we call the vested pot, part of the vested amount that you bring into the two pot system, will still be split up, and then you'll have the savings portion of that. So you will have access to the minimum most that you can withdraw is 2,000. Unfortunately, if you have less than that, unfortunately, you cannot withdraw. But you can access 10% of what you've saved to the cap of 30,000. And I think it's important. So if you, for instance, your 10% could be 50,000 or 60,000, depending on what the portion of your savings look like, you will still be capped at 30,000. And that 30,000, when you withdraw the 30,000, unfortunately, it will text. It will attract us. It is treated as income.
Okay.
Therefore, it attracts what we call marginal tax.
Okay.
So it will be taxed as income on top of the income that you already earning. And so the rules are different there. Where when it comes to withdrawals, the taxation and the tax regime on the withdrawals from the savings is treated as marginal tax. Yeah.
When we say a marginal tax, does that mean that it's, I think it's just a follow-up on my side to say, is that a fixed amount? Is that a flexible amount? Because like you said, it's capped at 10% and the 30%. So I imagine that if it's capped at 30%, then your tax must also
It is. South Africa has almost like a progressive tax system, right? The more you earn, the more we tax you. and similarly to the amount of withdrawal. So think about it as the you going up the step ladder. So the higher you go up the step ladder in terms of the amount that you withdraw, the higher the tax amount. And that's how it's going to be treated. The marginal tax depends on the amount that you're going to withdraw. So it's not a fixed amount. It differs in terms of how much you withdrawing from the savings pot. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other one is because we are only allowed, at least from the research that we've done, you're only allowed one withdrawal per tax year, right? What should members actually consider before making that withdrawal?
So two things. The first thing that, and maybe it might not necessarily be a popular view, is make sure that you absolutely need the money. Right. Yeah. It's absolutely, this is an emergency, something that is unforeseen, it's something that you can cope with under normal circumstances. So think about your absolute need to withdraw, right? And consider this. Remember, if you withdraw the money that you withdraw from your savings, you're actually taking out of your future retirement money. So it's not going to be cumulative. It actually gets reduced. So if you were to leave that amount in that savings pot, it will grow. Right. Yeah. And that's what it's meant to do. And at retirement, you can actually access that money. But the money will be slightly more than the amount had you withdrawn the money. So two things that you need to consider. You must absolutely know that the money that you're going to withdraw is strictly for emergencies. And let's not create emergencies. A trip to Mauritius is not an emergency. Renovating maybe your kitchen might not necessarily be an emergency, but there's things that we know as South Africans, we under heavy debt. And if your way of reducing your debt just to cope with the cost of living is using those emergency funds, by all means. Unforeseen emergencies, your roof broke, there perhaps other emergencies, yes. But you must also keep in mind that you will be taxed on that amount.
Yeah.
And I think that's the second most critical part. So yes, think about it as an emergency fund that's sitting somewhere,
yeah,
and only use if it's absolutely critical that you use it, but know that it will be taxed. So whatever you see as an amount is not going to come out as that at the end. Yeah.
Maybe just to drill slightly deeper on this, would I be understanding, I guess, the intention around the rules correctly to say that the reason why we're treating it as an emergency fund is as a, maybe as a, because you talk about carrots and sticks, maybe as a carrot for people to keep the money in the pot so that it grows as much as possible and people can take advantage of compound interest and all of that.
Absolutely. The eighth miracle, right? Compound interest. Yes. The ideal situation is preservation. Preserve as much as you possibly can. Yeah. But also take advantage of growth. Because the more you withdraw, unfortunately, the more you lose on potential growth on that fund. So in terms of going one level down is, the amount that we're throwing, it's going to have, unfortunately, a negative impact on what the future amount could have looked like had you not withdrawn those funds. So hence we're saying, treat it as an ultimate emergency, something that you cannot do without. To me, that's the most important part. Only take the funds if you absolutely need them, but be aware also that you will be losing in terms of the potential upside over the period.
It's actually great advice that you are giving us right now, and over the years that I've been doing this type of thing, I've actually come to know a number of financial planners, and they always encourage that a person, obviously they're a little bit biased, but I think it's good that people take some type of financial advice of some sort. So with that in mind, what we've talked about, some of the considerations before withdrawing, but when it comes to either structuring someone's two-pot and all that, what are some of the important considerations when it comes to implementing some type of financial advice related to the two-pot system?
Let's stick to that first, right? Say it's amazing how friends and families are important to us, right? It's amazing how old folk tales come to, particularly when it comes to finances and health, that everybody suddenly becomes an expert. They'll tell you what to do with it and what's... Please consider using financial advisors, accredited financial advisors. Of course, I would prefer a certain company, but the bottom line is choose somebody that's accredited, that is knowledgeable, that you can trust with the decisions that they're going to. Ultimately, the decision is going to be yours, right?
Yes.
Decision is mine. They will show me options. They will show me what I can and cannot do. They will advise me and say, these are the options that you have. But if ultimately, I will be the one that makes a call on that. So please consider using accredited, trusted financial advisors to make those decisions. This is going to be one of the most critical decisions that we will make in a lifetime. It's in terms of pension reforms. Ideally, sit with somebody that has your best interest at heart, that will be able to give you the options and tell you the honest, but nothing but the honest truth in terms of the implications of any decisions that we make. We absolutely advise that you seek help from a financial advisor before you make any decisions. Family and friends are important, as I've said, but try to get somebody professional.
Some professional advice.
Please.
Very, very, very important advice there. Make sure that you go out and get some type of financial advice professionals.
Professional.
People that can look at you objectively and tell you some of those, hard truths about what actually needs to be done to grow your money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you said something very important. Professional accredited, because half of us, I'm sure, can give advice if asked for, but I'm not sure if we are qualified professional and accredited financial advisors. Seek help from those.
All right, cool. Now, the other piece when it comes to this is something called the replacement ratio.
Yes.
Right. Maybe you could talk to us about, replacement ratio and why it's important in retirement planning. But before we talk about the importance patience. Maybe just a little bit of understanding for, you know, money. These money things, they tend to be quite complex to a lot of people. So someone would just be sitting there trying to understand firstly, what is a replacement ratio?
The replacement ratio in its simplest form is the amount of money as a ratio of what you're going to need post retirement. Let's simplify this, right? When you are still active in employment, there's certain expenses, there's certain liabilities, there's certain expectations that you are able to cover with the current income, right? Yeah. So you get paid at the end of the month, you know, you have rent if you're renting, you have a bond if you have, you're so inclined, you have electricity, you have food, and you have et cetera, et cetera. Right. And you are able to cover those with your income. And the income is typically recurring. So you can deplete your money at the end of the month, but it will be replaced, right? So you will still get the replacement of that income. And that's how you would live by. But the replacement ratio speaks to post that when there is not necessarily going to be the replenishment, at least from a recurring point of view, right, of the funds that you have. And the ratio that we're talking about is the amount that you're going to need to live off post-retirement, right? So you've retired and you know your lifestyle, you know your type of life that you want for yourself, and you need to maintain that life.
Yeah.
But then there's no longer that income that comes from being employed, et cetera, et cetera. So prior to retirement, part of the planning is knowing what does that amount look like. So if my lifestyle is a 10,000 rands as I'm employed now, post-employment, I still want to maintain the lifestyle. Yes, I might not have some of the expenses, but the most important thing is you also don't have that much income. So the replacement ratio is the amount that you would need post that retirement. You need, most importantly, you still need to maintain your lifestyle. Hence, you would be cautious as to how much do you need to put aside, right, for you to be able to maintain that lifestyle post your retirement. That is from part of the plan. You can't leave that to chance. You need to know, for instance, the amount that I'm contributing on a monthly basis, is this going to give me my 10,000 rands lifestyle post retirement?
Yeah.
And there is a specific ratio that you can use to measure how much do you need to put aside now that will give you access to that kind of lifestyle post-retirement.
Okay. So let's talk about that lifestyle and funding that lifestyle post-retirement. What is the calculation? You mentioned just now that that's part of the planning planning process. But how does someone actually go about the calculation? Because at least for the uninitiated, I guess I'm just thinking about, okay, how much is rent or how much is my food and that type. Is that all, or is there, you know, more to the science?
You need to be more detailed than, firstly, let's start with, please seek help from the financial advisors.
Yes,
they do accredited. Have tools to help you calculate. So they can basically look at your lifestyle now and say, based on your lifestyle, right, these are the expenses, these are income streams that you have, these are likely going to be your expenses post-retirement. And based on that, they are able to give you an amount that will be able to cover you. So there are existing tools. There's also digital tools that you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
But my advice is seek advice from a credible and professional financial advisor. But the whole idea is be as detailed as possible. Do you own the house? Where do you live? What kind of other expenses you're going to have? So part of your monthly normal budgeting should be able to help you inform what goes into your replacement value. Because in that, you can't just be wishy-washy around how much you're spending. You need to be precise. And you need to take into consideration, by the way, things like inflation. Your replacement ratio will be influenced by inflation. So you need to be able to calculate, taking into consideration the future value of your current money. What will it look like, and what do you need to put in that? But talk to financial advisors, the specific tools that you can be able to apply to get to the correct replacement ratio.
Right. Out of interest, this is just as a follow-up. When it comes to these replacement ratios, Once again, like I said, I've gotten to know a couple of financial planners in my life, and there are all these formulas that they always suggest. One third, should be, this type of expense, and you can't be paying more than 25% should be, all of these things.
Absolutely.
Are there any rules of thumb, around these issues?
Yes and no, because, if you ask 60 million individuals, they have 60 million different lifestyles. Typically, I think the biggest ratio that you need to look at is the amount of debt that you take on. So your amount of debt versus your amount of expenses broadly, and the amount of savings. So that ratio need to be. For instance, if you find yourself, sadly, and which is a very sad statistics, for instance, the middle class in South Africa spend just over 70% of every rent servicing debt.
Wow.
That tells you that we're in trouble. Yes. So if you start going beyond 20% on your debt, you're starting to tinker into the trouble land. Right now, we know for a fact that only less than 7% of us will retire comfortably, which means over 90%, if nothing happens, over 90% of us will be on a SASSA queue, unfortunately. So your savings also. And you don't save because you have money, right? You save because you have life, you have a goal, you have things that you need to achieve. So there is no specific amount that I would say, hey, save 25%. If you are able to do 20% into your savings, by all means do that, right? But the one area that I want to urge, particularly South Africans, is manage your debt. Make sure that when you go into retirement, you're not carrying any debt if you possibly can. Clear it off at the ages of 50, 55, start clearing off your debt so that you are well prepared into that. So your replacement ratio will be largely influenced by how much of debt do you have? How much of savings do you have? What kind of lifestyle do you have? And then work your ratios. Excess of everything is not good. So be moderate, be prudent in how you manage and spend your money.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a really great and informative discussion, just talking to Thabo about some financial advice as it pertains to the two-pot system. He was just giving us some insight into the impetus that has led us to this point, maybe departing from what's considered the old retirement system, highlighting for us how the new system works versus the old one, and also how there's a huge encouragement around preservation. I think that was one of the key messages that is being driven, because treat it as an emergency fund, up until retirement, because you want your money to be able to grow as much as possible, but to just as a stick. Because we spoke about the carrot and the stick, we try and encourage people to have as much money post-retirement. So up until that point, they do give, I don't want to use the word penalties, but a discouragement, because we spoke quite a bit about some of those things and some of the tax implications that actually go, into some of the withdrawals that people make, from some of those accounts and the things that people need to be thinking about. He also just then emphasized that treat it as an emergency account, and also think about the tax implications, and most importantly, go out and seek financial advice from accredited financial advisors. He emphasized that quite a bit, and also just talking about understanding what your lifestyle will likely look like post retirement, so that as you are planning how much money to have towards the end, you can also know what type of lifestyle you have. And he explained to us that that is what's called the replacement ratio. You no longer have the same amount of income that you did before, but you still have to maintain a certain amount of a certain lifestyle. And those are all the things that need to be planned for. The financial advisors have a way of, helping to calculate that. But the last word of encouragement was to at least make sure that people have their debts cleared by the time that they reach that particular retirement age, so that you're not burdened with some of these debts, because that 70 cents, on the rand, it is a tough situation. So that was us. We were in conversation with Thabo Holo, who is Program Manager for Old Mutual Financial Education. Thabo, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.